Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in Boys Huddle with me, Bram, and with me per usual, after actually far too long, my master of all things video and sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
Rejoining us, I'm fired up to announce, after an even longer break, almost a year, the lead of Locked On Warriors, a play-by-play broadcaster for the Big Ten and formerly the Pac-12, a sports anchor with experience in California, Kentucky, Oklahoma City, and Illinois, and a podcast host who deftly used her last guest's history with the Memphis Grizzlies to create some great content, Miss Kylan Mills. What's going on, Kylan?
Not much. So glad to be back on. Thanks for having me and looking forward to kicking it and talking some Warriors off season because, man, I'm ready for the season to start. I don't know about you, but like the summer months need to fly by and I'm ready for October to be here.
I can tell you I'm just tired of seeing Boston celebrate in any context at all. I'm so tired of that crowd. But before we get too far away from it, Maxine, on the off chance that you didn't catch the Locked On Warriors this week, Kylan had Aaron Wilson, who's now Cron 4, covering the Warriors, you know, Golden State through and through. But before that was a Memphis Grizzlies reporter. And to both Kylan and Aaron's credit, they talked about Aaron's experience in 22 because she was a beat writer for the Grizzlies and kind of cool insight. But it leads to this question. Do you guys ever use someone's fandom against them? Like, do you ever change your opinion once you realize someone is rooting for a specific team? I'll give you a stupid example. We've been working on our fence at my house last couple of weeks, and the guy who's working on it, we've talked about just BS, passing topics. And when I was paying him for the first time this morning, he was wearing a NASCAR jacket. And for whatever reason, it really screwed me up. We didn't say anything. I didn't learn any new information about him. He's been nothing but sweet. The bill was less than I thought. I mean, all these things. And then the second I saw the NASCAR jacket, I've got a whole new perception of this guy. So I know I'm a psychopath, but I don't know if this thing is a psychopathic thing to do. So asking you guys, does someone's fandom, can it impact your view on their personality?
I'll go. Well, first of all, I want to know what's like your stereotype or perception of NASCAR fans, because that's actually something I just was talking to Aaron Wilson about. You brought up, she was out at Sonoma covering the races and she was like, NASCAR was way more fun than I thought it would be. Cool. I said, NASCAR fans kind of scare me. So like, if you enjoy NASCAR, I'm kind of on the same page as you. How did your perception change? Like, well, what's your, stereotypical view of NASCAR
fans? I mean, we'll probably have to beat this because there may be NASCAR fans listening, but I view it as like a mega rally. I'm 100%. My perception of NASCAR is not the best. And when this dude started telling me that he was a NASCAR guy or showing me that he was a NASCAR guy, I immediately was like, ooh, we are different. I think we're on different sides of the political divide here, but I don't know. Having never seen a NASCAR event, I have no idea. That's just my negative perception.
Yeah, I totally hear that. I will say that I think there is a little bit of judgment pass depending on what someone is a fan of, but you got to try to see past it. One of my best friends actually is a diehard New England Patriots and Tom Brady fan. Shout out to my friend Jade. But when we first met, I remember being like, ooh, like she straight up was like dressing up like Brady for Halloween, like wearing the jerseys everywhere. And I was just kind of like, Patriots fan. I don't know about this. So I will say that there's a little bit of judgment passed for sure. What do you think, Maxine?
Well, especially if they're going to the Halloween costume level.
Yes.
You know, it's one thing to be like, I'm a Patriots Halloween. Fan. Yep. It's another Halloween thing to show up like, oh, no, I'm Tom Brady for Halloween. That's a, yep. You're doing big things. Yep. I love the Warriors. I've never been a Warrior for Halloween. Maxine, I think you're definitely like me. No doubt at all. You're normally healthier. But in this instance, I think you are judging away. What's the answer?
For sure. So yeah, Kylan, I was just, the reason I've been off the pod for a few weeks, I was visiting some family in France. And I don't know if you know this, but the European fandom is on a whole other level. If they see you in a jersey for an opposing team, they literally might kill you. And I've had that experience before. My cousin, when I was a lot younger in France, gave me a jersey of like a local French team. And then we went to visit some museums in Spain. I had no idea. I was like 10 years old and I'm wearing this jersey and a kid approaches me like with his fists up. It's like, I don't even understand your language. So I've been sort of brought into this environment where, yeah, it's not just judgment. It's full on like we're going to throw bows. Yeah, I don't trust anybody else.
Who played soccer in college and has been around and a fan of like European soccer or football fans, that's literally like life or death. Yes. So you have to be super careful. That's like a different level of fandom than anything we even know in the United States. Like it's nuts.
I attended a game in Barcelona, 0-0 tie, and it was the most emotion I've ever seen in my life. But enough about random fandom. Let's go to the jump, you guys. So I got a whole bunch of stuff about the finals, even more stuff about Kuminga. But some news came out today that caught my attention. I don't know. I need your opinion. I might need you to talk me off the ledge. I'm not sure. So in order to describe this right, I went to people who write for a living. Yeah, this is from SF Gate as of this afternoon. Quote, as of Friday afternoon, the shooting guard, talking about Klay Thompson, had unfollowed Golden State, but was still following the Santa Cruz Warriors, the team's G League affiliate, and Warriors Community Foundation. Aside from a post honoring late coach Dehan, Thompson's most recent photo in Warriors gear is now from April 2022. However, that photo is a sponsored post with Tissot, which he's likely contractually obligated not to delete. So to give a little bit of the background here, Klay Thompson is all over social media. One of those things is on Instagram. He has unfollowed the Warriors and has apparently deleted every piece that shows him in Warriors gear through April of 2022. And so just for point of reference, 2022 was their last title. That title was won in June. So if he stopped it in April, he's also deleted all the stuff from the last title. All right. Different reads. You know, we went to Twitter. I asked people's opinion. Some people believe this is just negotiation. You know, you got to start somewhere. So he's playing hardball. Some believe it's a crack in the relationship, you know. He is, this is not my term, but something I'm stealing from Twitter, being petty and is already starting to walk away. All right. So I got two questions, Kylan. Question one, does this mean anything to you? You know, as far as his relationship with the Warriors, does him, you know, deleting his content, not following them, is that significant for any reason? And then question two, how does this make you feel? You know, what emotional response does this take from you? What do you got?
First of all, yes, I'm 1,000% reading into this. I am analyzing this, and I think it means something. I think that there is a crack in the relationship between Klay Thompson and the Warriors. I think if there wasn't, then we would have seen conversations about him being re-signed, moving along much earlier. Because you go back to recent history, and it was Anthony Slater with The Athletic who first reported right about 2 weeks ago that there was no movement from either side on talking about getting Klay Thompson back and signing a deal. You go all the way back to December. It was reported by Shams, I believe, that even going back to prior to this past season, contract negotiations between the Warriors and Thompson stalled when they were trying to do it in that offseason because the Warriors were offering Thompson a two-year deal in the range of $48 million, right. I believe it was, and he was not happy with that offer at all, and they were not on the same page. Obviously, they went through the season. This season took place. There were also reports out that the Warriors and the Orlando, or not the Warriors, that Klay Thompson and the Orlando Magic might have interest. So to me, like there's some writing on the wall and there's some, you know, crumbs being left along the trail that tell me that going into official start of free agency, that there is a very good chance that Klay Thompson is leaving. So I'm 100% reading into the unfollowing of the Warriors and possible deleting of photos. I think that he would have already been signed if there wasn't some type of crack or at least slight conflict in that relationship. And I think it's going to be very difficult with the budget the Warriors are on to put an amount to Klay Thompson that's going to bring him back that he's going to be happy with, unless he's willing to take a major pay cut. I think we saw a tough year for Klay, even getting moved to the bench. Like, how much can he swallow his pride and how badly does he want to come back to the Warriors? To me, that's a question that he has to answer because he knows this team is on a tight budget with the way the luxury tax is. And so are those two things going to come together? I am feeling more doubtful by the day. That's my honest take on it. And I know it's not the rosiest take. I think it's sad. I think it's got to be sad when you look at the big three, like officially breaking up, the dynasty being over. That's actually something we talked about on Locked On Warriors yesterday. Like, is the window closed? Is the dynasty over? The existential crisis? But I will say Klay Thompson leaving would be like a huge step in saying, yeah, that's actually where we're at.
Of course. Does this mean anything? So you hit all the biggest things for me. As far as not my emotional response, certainly I've had one, but how do I read this? Does it mean more, you know, than just a flick of the wrist and getting off of social media? Hell yeah, it does. The breadcrumbs. So I'll just go to the end analysis. I think anyone would tell you that if Klay is going to take less than he's going to be offered in other places, which I think he's definitely going to be offered, it wasn't Bleacher Report that came out and said he's got an affiliation with Orlando. It was Shams. And so, like, that's, you know, if Shams is reporting that there's interest there, that smoke is probably leading to fire. So if there's interest and Klay is going to be offered $30 million or something, the only possible reason that he would stay here, take the pay cut we're all hoping for, is the relationship, right? That's it. Just the history. The idea, even if this is just negotiation, if that's what he's doing, if he hasn't already turned his back and is negotiating, if he's negotiating hardball in this way, that's not a great sign for his relationship. You know, that doesn't necessarily suggest that what he's doing is, well, you know what matters the most to me is the history with the Warriors, because he just deleted that fucking history through April of 2022. So am I worried about it? Yes. My reaction. This reminds me of how I react to poorly reviewed movies, and then I like them. Here's what I mean, okay? I know how I'm supposed to feel about Klay Thompson going into this next year. I had a lot of criticism of him last year. I know the Warriors can't afford him. I understand that the cap concerns and everything else. And so I knew before this came out, I knew there's a great chance he wasn't going to be here. So this shouldn't make me feel anything, right? Same way, if I'm watching a movie that has been reviewed very poorly, I know I should dislike it. Then I watch it and like it. I feel totally different. I know I shouldn't be upset about this. I'm upset. I don't like it at all. I don't like the news that he's affiliated with other people. I don't like that he's deleted these pictures. I don't like that there's even a fracture in the relationship. I don't like any of this. And to be fair, carrying on a common theme, I'm a crazy person. I'm the kind of sicko where if I break up in a relationship, I want the other person to stay in arrested development forever. I don't want them to be in any other relationships. I want to like look over there and all they do is think about our old relationship. So this is a sicko's opinion on it, but it upset me. It absolutely did. Maxine?
I agree. I think you implied or you asked at the beginning if this was an implication that maybe this was part of a negotiation tactic, and I don't think so. I think it's the result of negotiations potentially gone sour. Maybe sour isn't the right word, but this is a symptom of what's happening behind the scenes. And I can just see Klay, you know, like when he was coming back and it wasn't going really well and he was sitting at the press conferences after the games and he would do that like, psh, and then like shake his head. I could see him doing that with each one of these pictures.
Like,
right. Yeah. It's just so Klay, right? It's, he's just sitting there with each one of these posts. Psh, they don't respect me, you know? And like just one at a time over and over again at like 2 a.m. sitting on his boat or whatever, entirely in darkness. And it breaks my heart. This is, you know, Steph is my favorite player. Draymond is the heartbeat of the team, but there's a magic that Klay brings that thinking about him not being here, it's one thing to talk about it and talk about the salary and talk about what happens next in this abstract sort of mathematical process. But when you're actually really thinking about him not being on the team anymore and he's still being in the league, therefore being on some theoretical competitor, it's hard to take.
The idea of him being pissy coming home, because we're talking about a multi-step process. It's one thing if he gets home and he goes unfollow, you know, and then that's an emotional thing and it would mean something, but that's a one flick of the wrist. You know, that maybe takes 5 seconds, 10 seconds. to then be like, oh, I'm deleting this and I'm deleting this and I'm deleting this and I'm deleting this and I'm deleting this.
That's a breakup. That's a full-on breakup.
It really is.
You're in a relationship. Like, we are broken up when I get to deleting the actual 100% photo. You know what I mean?
And his agent, somebody must have called him because there's no way that Clay thought to himself, okay, this Tissot ad, I got to keep up. You know, like someone must have been like, look, I know you're going to be all upset. So just keep this one, you know, like do anything else you want, but like, please keep this one aside. We're still at the outset, or we're still finding out what's going to happen. And maybe it all works out. Maybe he comes back. But as far as like picking up breadcrumbs, reading the signs, this sign reads as a giant F you to the Warriors from Klay Thompson for me. And I guess we'll see where it goes to the finals, you guys. Give me a glass half full. Kylan, you may remember, this is normally done with Warriors basketball. We look back at recent hoop, give something we like or don't like. Since there is no Warriors basketball, and I just burned the most recent piece of Warriors news, look to the finals. Give me something you like or don't like about that series.
Well, I'm actually going to relate the series back to what we've seen from the Warriors of the past, and I think they can get back there. But first of all, to me, it shows that defense, at the end of the day, will beat good offense. Mm. And that's what I've seen a little bit in this back and forth between the Celtics and the Mavs. Because to me, you look at, first of all, the Mavs offense, too one-dimensional. You've got to be able to score in different ways. Like, Kyrie and Luka have not been both on superstar-wise in the same night. And I think that they've been exposed for those two literally being the offense versus the Celtics having more diversified ways to score. They can get out in transition. And the transition also leads to my second point, which is defense winning, beating offense. And you've seen how much Luka Doncic has been exposed during this series. And we already knew he wasn't a good defender, but like traffic cone-like throughout. And when you look at the two stars on these two teams and Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic, you can easily point to which two are more athletic and better defenders. And to me, that is the story of this. Also, the Celtics, when you look back at the regular season body of work, second best defensive efficiency. And to me, that's also showing. And like I said, that's huge because that also leads to transition buckets. And that's why the Warriors were so good back in 2022. Same thing when they won the title that year, second in the league in defensive efficiency. Right. To me, I know we can talk a lot about different pieces that need to be brought in, but can they get back to that level of defense? And Steve Kerr has wanted it to be the identity of this group. And for whatever reason, the last two regular seasons, the Warriors have completely fallen off. But can they get back there and get to the defense and that identity that won them the title? To me, that still works in today's NBA, is having a good defensive unit. And then I do think they need to diversify the offense a little bit. I think they need a big man who can score, whether it be inside or a stretch big, because you live and die by the three. There's a very small margin for error when your players are aging and you turn the ball over. Right. So yeah, bringing it all back to the Warriors. I love that Celtics showing that defense can get it done. And then a couple of different ways to score, I think, is going to win out over a more one-dimensional offense and the team with a weaker defense. So there you have it.
I got a like and don't that both relate back to Golden State, but just to kind of prove I've actually been watching the finals. I'll give you a finals take too, although it doesn't fit into the like and don't like. Here's my observation. Damian Lillard to Milwaukee won the championship for the Boston Celtics. The second that Drew Holiday landed in a Celtics jersey, it dictated the exact defense, Kylan, that you were just describing.
Yep.
They do not have to double Kyrie and are still getting all of the results with that defensive pressure that they want.
Such a good point. Yeah.
We're watching it play out. Careful what you trade for and how it can impact other people. Things I like and don't. Things I like. Right after the world wanted to call Luka and Kyrie maybe the best backcourt of all time, they went fucking 0-3 to the team, the Warriors, or more specifically, the best backcourt of all time, beat. So fuck you, Dallas, and fuck everybody who wanted to talk about them being the best backcourt ever before they won anything. I love that. Okay. What I don't like, how far the Warriors are from contention. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the window's closed. I listened to your pod. I liked a lot of the takes. So I'm going to oversimplify it, and I'm going to keep it in this duo conversation. You look at all of the teams who are in contention during these playoffs, the final eight, the final four from each side of the conference, they all have a significant duo. Denver, Joker, Murray, Minnesota, Cat Edwards, OKC, Chet, SGA, Dallas, Kyrie, Luka, Boston, JB, JT, Indiana, Siakam, Tyrese, The Knicks, Brunson, Randall, they all have them. The last one, just to finish it out, Cleveland, Garland, Mitchell. They all have duos, all of them. The upside, the tip top of the pyramid, the Warriors still have a guy who can mess with any of the number ones of those duos. Steph's as good as all these guys. The downside, the thing I don't like, there's not a second dude. We don't have a duo. There's not even someone I can be like, well, where does the Warriors duo fit into these? Because we don't have a duo. Now, I'm hoping, got a whole bunch of Kuminga questions coming. Maybe one's developing. But that's one of the things that stuck out during these playoffs is we are far. we are fairly far here. Maxime?
Well, yeah, before I give you glass half full and glass half empty to respond to a couple of things that you both brought up. One, this is why Bob Myers left, right? He saw the writing on the wall that with the new CBA, there's no way that you can have a big three. It's going to be a big two.
Right.
The teams that were best positioned to adapt to that environment are the ones that Bram just listed off. So it's no surprise that we're behind the people that are behind the eight ball because we were built for a different literal era of the NBA. So it's really tough, but this is not a surprise that we're dealing with. It's nonetheless depressing as hell.
Maxime, a quick research question. I should have done this before we hopped on. Do you know if Bob Myers' kids work for ESPN?
I do not.
Okay, because I was told that Bob Myers wanted to spend time with his family. And that was on ESPN constantly. So the whole idea is like, look, I just need time off. I love it here. Of course I'd stay. I'm going to go be with his kids. Either those kids are on set or that was some bullshit.
Bob Myers.
He sold it.
I could not be any less interested in listening to anybody talk about basketball. That Bob Myers is providing the most generic commentary. Like, I'm sorry, the only difference between him and me, I mean, he's a little bit more polished in his manner of speech, but literally I'm just as capable of providing the commentary that this dude is providing. I recognize he's clearly brilliant, but he's not willing to divulge any actual thought into what he's talking about, and it drives me completely crazy.
I can't stand him either. I don't understand because, like you said, theoretically, or at least from everything we know, he's brilliant, but it is not translating. And TV wise, so boring. There was a clip that was aggregated and went pretty viral where he was asked, like, during one of the finals, like, what did the Pacers do well? And he just, like, went completely off another direction and gave the worst, most generic. I was just like, what is this? Like, what's happening? It blows my mind because of how theoretically brilliant he is. Why can't he just say it? Yeah, I don't get it, but it's bad TV. It's bad TV. I'm sorry.
I couldn't be more compelled because I keep waiting for the camera to pan out and showing him developing this incredible relationship with his daughters. I'm sure it's going to happen at some point. You know, like whatever it is, having a game of catch. I don't know. Whatever it was he was talking about when he was like, I need more family time. I'd like to see that play out on the ESPN set because unless he considers Stephen A. Smith some family member, he doesn't appear to be spending a whole lot of quality time. I cut you off, Maxime. Where are you?
That's all right. I think the glass half empty, which I went into this series, I think, you know, a lot of the, Bram, you tweeted out, like, is there any way that we can have neither team win this thing? As a Warriors fan, I mean, I'm not excited to crown either one of these teams, either one of these individual groups champion as soon as potentially this evening. Luka at this point is worse than a traffic cone, Kylan, because at least a traffic cone isn't going to reach out and foul out of the game. It's so embarrassing. And I heard some comments from Kidd after the fact that he said, okay, the things that we talked about going into this season, like we need you to be in better shape, right? We need you to show up a little bit more on defense and we need you to kind of stop whining. This is, I hate to say it, you know, I have a young kid, right? And at this point he could be anything, right? He starts like standing and it's like, oh my God, he's in the 75th percentile of height. He's going to be in the NBA, right? That's not really going to happen, but of course I can dream. And I'm realizing now, I don't know that I want him to be in the NBA because Luka has been affiliated with the highest levels of basketball since he was 16. He's a spoiled brat. Like I don't necessarily want my kid to develop into somebody that has all the attention and the limelight because I don't care how talented you are. He's being exposed right now as the type of person that actually isn't capable of leading a championship team to a championship the way that Steph Curry was. So again, it just breaks my heart that on either side of this relationship, we're either going to have to crown a very unlikely, petulant child as a champion, or we're going to have to crown Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Jason Tatum, who 2 years ago was saying he was the second coming of Kobe Bryant, which was really weird. Having ghost texts back and forth with Kobe making me feel really uncomfortable. And Jaylen Brown, who's like Kyrie Light in his like sort of weird political spectrum off the court. So it's just, it's really uncomfortable for me. And I wish we could have more wholesome family fun basketball, but this is 2024.
I feel like we should start calling you Maxime Windhorse. Did you guys see Windhorse's take? Do you see his take about Luka last night or
honestly,
a couple nights ago?
He's not my favorite, but I think he was spot on.
Agreed.
Like, it was deserved. Luka deserved to be ripped into for lack of effort, defense, all the things that he was saying. Like,
yes,
Windy's not my favorite, but I was like, yeah, I can't hate on this.
Yeah, I thought it was perfect that Luka fell onto the ground there in an unacceptable position to put himself in with 4 minutes left with five fouls, and then immediately looks at the bench and says, you better bleeping challenge it, as if it's the bench's fault that he just made a terrible play. I'm standing here in the Mavericks tunnel. Over there is the Celtics tunnel. That's where the winners are. If Luka's ever going to be a winner coming out of this tunnel here, he is going to have to use this what's happened in this finals as a learning experience. His defensive performance is unacceptable. He is a hole on the court. The Celtics are attacking him. They are ahead in this series because they have attacked him defensively. And you've got a situation here where Luka is complaining about the officiating. They have begged him. They have talked with him. They have pleaded with him. He is costing his team because of how he treats the officials. He's a brilliant player. He does so many things well. They are here because of how he did. His performance in this game is unacceptable and the reason why the Mavericks are not going to win. He's got to get over this. And the fact that he came out after the game and blamed the officials showed me he's nowhere close yet. So maybe over the summer, somebody will get to him because nobody with the Mavericks or anybody else in his life has. And that's where the Mavericks are at this point. They're never going to get to this tunnel with the trophy if he doesn't improve those aspects of his game.
Talk about compelling television. Oof. Even just like the way he phrased it of like, I'm standing here in the Mavericks tunnel. Over there is the winner's tunnel. And if you'd like to do this, this is what he's going to have to do to be in the winner's tunnel. It's like, my God, Brian, like, did you have money on this series? Like, why? What's the emotion coming from? Like, that's fine. You can like give him crap about defense, but I don't know if you need to tease him about the fucking winner's tunnel. I digress. Although one last finals thing, and they're going to lose is what it is. But credit to Jason Kidd with this gangster ass move, I think, of right after the first game, evaluating the talent, probably realizing after a couple of conversations with some assistant coaches, they're better. This team's better. You know, like we're on paper, we can't really match their talent. And then coming in and trying to drive drama into the other locker room by being like, you know, who's the best player? Jaylen Brown. I love that kid did that. You know, it was just like, well, let's throw a mind games grenade in there. Hopefully it'll happen. It didn't look like it made a giant difference, but good for him.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Kuminga, okay? I got a bunch of pointed and specific Kuminga questions, some prediction stuff we're going to run through. But before we do that, one big, bright softball question. And Kylan, I'm going to address it to you. True or false, okay? This statement is true or false. The most important person to the Warriors' success next season, not named Steph Curry, is Jonathan Kuminga.
True.
Why?
Well, I've got a number of reasons, but first, what we kind of just talked about in terms of the Warriors needing a consistent secondary score. Yes, do I think they need to bring people in and change this roster? Absolutely. But Jonathan Kuminga has the potential to be that. And even if he's not the secondary scorer, he has the potential to be an impact maker and he can be the difference maker. He needs to be starting. He needs to be consistently what we saw flashes of where he's dropping 20 plus a night. Maybe I can't remember when he had his hot streak in February of last season. But I think his development is absolutely critical to the Warriors' success this season and the following season, no matter what roster changes they make. We pointed out the CBA, they can only do so much. And that does mean that some of the current pieces are going to have to step up. And when you talk about who they would possibly offload in trade conversations in free agency, if they need to get rid of some of the salaries, like, to me, Jonathan Kuminga's off the market. He is huge, huge, huge potential to be the difference maker for the Golden State Warriors. There is no one on this roster that has his athletic skill set. No one. But you can't be replicated. And you saw the development the last couple of years. I think he's getting better at the mental side of the game, the tactical side, where he needs to go. Like, maybe still a little bit like behind in rotations at times, but I think he's gotten so much better. If he can polish up some of those things, I would love to see him continue to develop his three-point shot as well. I think that we saw a little bit more of the mid-range from him. Like, he has the major potential to be a three-level scorer, elite athleticism, one of the best out in open court in the NBA. I think he has the potential. And something he's actually said in the past is that he wants to model his game after Giannis in terms of ability to finish around the rim, finish over bigger guys. But look at the freakish athleticism that he has. I'm not going to laugh at him for saying that. Yeah, Giannis is bigger, but like, we see that elite explosiveness and his ability to get above the rim. And there's no one on this roster who is anything like that. If he can polish up some of those things and bring the consistency this season, who knows what the future could hold, especially if they bring in some other pieces at other positions. So that's
my agree. Completely agree. Bold, all caps, true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of the two things that can make a giant difference next year, kind of oversimplifying broad categories, right? They add a star or they develop it. Of those two, so adding a star, Lacob has already told us he wants to get under both aprons. The challenges the cap presents on making that kind of a trade are hard as hell. And then go look at Phoenix. Even though they were able to do it, it's not like the addition of Kevin Durant has vaulted them into title contention. So I'm not sure that area is really going to get us there, which leads development. One guy who's really going to develop here, you know, and it's going to be Jonathan Kuminga. Colin, you mentioned that no one on this roster has his athletic skill set. Hell yeah, that's true. That was true during their dynastic time.
Yeah.
Even when we were rolling towards 73 wins, four titles, we didn't have somebody who could get to the rim the way he can. So yeah, there's some real upsides here. Maxime, take our first over under. All right. I give you a number at 19. How many points per game for Jonathan Kuminga next year? You take the over or the under? For point of reference, 16.1 last year.
Yeah. Kylan just said we need more consistent 20 points per game scoring nights. That's it. I know you're asking me to actually predict. First, I will say it better be the over. It's a little bit dependent on who we get. For example, there are rumors out there that, you know, Jimmy Butler might have some interest. He was posting some stuff that it implied that he was taking a flight up to San Jose or whatever. So
He did.
Okay. So
he was on the Stanford campus. I know people saw him, and I think he did post at one point a follow-up where he was on the Stanford campus. Yeah. So he did come to Palo Alto.
You know, as Bram said earlier, those are the types of things that make prediction, as we always say, in the offseason hard, because you can see a complete revamp of the roster. We can see Steve Kerr continue to be worried about playing young guys, especially somebody like Jonathan Kuminga, who is very raw and therefore not necessarily trustworthy from a basketball IQ perspective. That has, for me, the biggest concerns. But on the flip side, what Kristen Peek said in 2021, when we were looking at the draft and we had that seventh, she said, this is the most high upside player in the top 10. And it's still true. I'm looking at that, you know, the six players that went before him, other than maybe Evan Mobley, there's nobody that I would want right now for this Warriors team. And then you have Steph Curry being an incredible role model. You still have Andre Iguodala, right? That taught him a little bit of the ropes of how to play smart. You have Brandon Podziemski sitting in the front row, clearly fanboying over Luka. These are the type of organization that shows that they really want to play high-level, intelligent basketball. So surrounding Jonathan Kuminga with that sort of stuff could set him up for success. And then if he shows enough intelligence on the court to win Steve Kerr's trust, then I think, and I will say that I'm taking the over on that, and I'm hopeful because of all of those different pieces coming together.
That sucks that you gave me the answer at the end, because I was just about to ask Kylan, what do you think he said, over or under? Because I had no idea, but we got there. He gave me the over. It turns out it is over. I think it is across the board over. Kylan, I saw you nodding. So yeah, we all take the over. I'll change the question then. Who has a higher points per game next year, Andrew Wiggins or Jonathan Kuminga?
I'm going with Jonathan Kuminga. You know, is Andrew Wiggins going to be on this roster next season? It's still a big question mark to me. Because of his contract, he's going to be a tough one to figure out a way to offload, but I wouldn't mind to see it based on the Wigs we saw last season. You talk about inconsistencies among the most inconsistent players on this roster, and that's hard to say because Clay was inconsistent, and we just talked about Jonathan Kuminga having some inconsistencies. So there you go. There's the problem for the Warriors, having no consistent scorer who can do the same thing or at least replicate the same thing, even somewhat, from night to night, and there's the issue. I would love to see Andrew Wiggins come back and go back to that 2022 NBA Finals Andrew Wiggins, but I just don't know where it's gone. I don't really know what's going on off the court because I do think it is affecting him. He's not able to be with the team all season long. It's happened back-to-back seasons where there's obviously some kind of personal issue that's affecting him. Right. Is that resolved? Is that something that's going to linger? None of us really and truly know the answer. So that's why I'm very hesitant to say what kind of production Andrew Wiggins is going to have this next season, assuming he's on this roster. And when you look at needing an upgrade, like, to me, getting a 3-and-D wing would not be a bad idea if you're looking at who or what type of player you're going to target or sign. Can you get a star, as we've talked about, with the restrictions? I don't know, but that's a big area of concern, in my opinion, based on what we saw from Andrew Wiggins. If he plays the same way he did last season, like, that is not a starting 3-and-D guy in a championship-level team, not based on the way he played.
So my God,
what's the game plan? Do you put Jonathan Kuminga in there? Do you put him at the three? I mean, he's not really a great outside shooter at this point. Would love to see him to continue to develop that. But what's the other solution? To me, the whole Andrew Wiggins conundrum is a big issue, actually, for the Warriors moving forward. So I'm going to say Jonathan Kuminga. But I still don't know, like, what do you do about Andrew Wiggins? I don't have a clear answer on that.
I can tell you that, I mean, having rooted for this team for more decades than I'm going to admit to you right now in this microphone, at no point have I ever heard or hoped that a Warrior was hurt. If I could press a button and make it so that Andrew Wiggins had been hurt over these last 2 years, I would have pressed it. Because then at least we know.
There's,
you know,
an explanation. Like,
okay,
yeah.
Like, he's hurt. It's a knee thing. Like, that's what's like. He scored 13 points per game last year. Why? Nobody knows. You know, at least nobody who can tell us the answer. Maybe Andrew knows. Maybe he doesn't. But, you know, I digress. I'll push this towards a three-point shooting question. Because you're right. We are going to need higher three-point shooting from Jonathan Kuminga. So here's the question. Who has a higher three-point percentage next year, Jonathan Kuminga or Draymond Green? All right, so here's some numbers for you, or at least some facts as we make our way up. Fact number one, this means nothing. We see them every year, but players work out during the summer. They post videos of those workouts, and then we say, oh, this player is good at this skill now. Mm-hmm. For Jonathan Kuminga, we're seeing a ton of videos of him shooting the three. There's point number one. Point number two, Jonathan Kuminga shot 32.1% from three-point land last year. Draymond Green shot 39.5%, close to the magical 40%. So next year, who shoots a higher three-point percentage? Maxime, you take this one first.
I mean, it's a wild stat from Draymond, especially because it's not a complete outlier, right? 2016 era Draymond shot the three pretty well, and that's a huge part of why we're able to space the floor out so well. I don't know. I mean, if Draymond's going to get a little bit old, I don't know. I guess I'll take Jonathan Kuminga, but I don't know.
My question is, are our teams going to have to start guarding Draymond Green out on the perimeter? Right. Because the thing is, like, half the threes you see him take, like, there is no one within like 10 yards of Draymond Green, because to this point, you haven't had to necessarily step out. I mean, like you're saying, back maybe in 2016, but the last several seasons, he hasn't been a scorer at any level, not just beyond the arc. So, you know, teams are just like, all right, you can hang out there in the corner, whatever, Draymond. Are they going to have to start guarding him now after he shot 39% last year? Like, is Draymond Green going to become a floor spacer? I didn't think I would say those words, but maybe.
I think
maybe.
That
I don't know.
If Draymond had shot 85% from the three last year, they're still leaving his ass open from three. I don't think we're ever going to see them be like, oop, 3-point shooter now. You know, I'll go with clean sweep. I mean, this is just optimism. I am really hoping there's a leap next year. And I've got some stats for you coming up here that suggest maybe there is a leap. Maybe we've got something coming up. As long as I'm being overly optimistic, just to make the point out loud, if we need a duo, I'm hoping the duo is Kuminga. If Kuminga is going to be a duo, he needs to be able to shoot from the outside, and he's going to have to be able to shoot higher than Draymond Green. So I take Jonathan Kuminga. Another question. Kylan, I'm going to ask only you this one. Your life, weird scenario. Your life is on the line. Your life is on the line, okay? And you have to pick one of these three players to go 2 for 2 from the free throw line. If they don't, you're dead, Kylan. You're dead. All right. I'm sorry. Scandalous. Don't know how you found yourself in this predicament. It is what it is. All right. Here's the three you have to pick from: Jonathan Kuminga, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green. Who do you take?
Oh, without knowing all their free throw shooting percentages last year, like, I'm not feeling good about surviving this. If I'm putting any of these three at the free throw line with the game or my life on the line. Ooh, that's a tough one. Oh, Jonathan Kuminga's free throw shooting is one thing that has just driven me crazy, because with his athleticism and ability to get to the cup, like, force teams to foul you, but then you have to make the free throws. Oh man, this is the hardest one you've asked yet.
Life on the line too. I mean,
I know, that's what I'm saying. I've got my own life in my hands. I feel like I'm going to go with Andrew Wiggins, and I'm trying to remember his free throw percentages of the past, and I feel like they were definitely better than the other two, but I don't know this past season what his numbers were because he was worse, but I'm gonna go with Andrew Wiggins.
I like it.
That to me is like a lose with all three of them, so I'm not feeling great.
100%. I mean, this is the I didn't give you three great options here. When I try to come up with it on my own mind, like, what I was thinking, okay, well, Draymond's probably been in the most pressure situation, you know, four titles.
True. And like,
but I can also remember him missing so many big free throws that we desperately needed.
That's what I was just thinking.
So many of them, you know? So I think in this scenario, I just start writing my will, you know, like, it is what it is. Like, who cares? I'm not sure where it lands. Here's the big thing we've been moving our way to, and it's where the stat comes in. Okay. I'm going to give you guys three players from NBA history, one current, two prior. And I want to know, I mean, it's subjective and we're guessing, but it's what this show is. I want to know which of these three players you think at the end of the day, Jonathan Kuminga's career will most resemble. All right. Player number one, Corey Maggette, former Warrior. Corey Maggette was a very large, strong dude. It's like 6'8", could get to the cup at will. Very athletic, probably had a fairly large upside, never met it. Put up big numbers on losing teams his entire career. Nothing of any note. You know, most NBA fans right now have no idea who Corey Maggette is. Player number two, Sean Marion. This comparison's not coming for me. Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr said that if he really channels everything, Kuminga could be a Sean Marion-like player. Also, lengthy, athletic dude, but he never used his powers of athleticism for scoring. He was always kind of mid-teens, shot well in the 50%, and then did everything else. Glue guy. Great defense, great rebounder, phenomenal on defense. Like I said, I mean, this was a guy who helped you win in all categories outside of scoring. Last guy, the biggest name on here and presumptive current finals MVP, Jaylen Brown. Big athletic guy. Does all those defensive things I just mentioned for Marion. Also has a very high offensive ceiling. You know, we just saw he's leading the Celtics right now. Kind of a pie in the sky comparison, and it'd be hard to put that. But here's my stats for you guys, okay? Here is Jaylen Brown's stats from his third season. Kuminga's going into his fourth. So here's Jaylen Brown's stats from his third season. Jaylen Brown, 25.9 minutes per game. Jonathan Kuminga, 26.4 minutes per game. Jaylen Brown, points, 13 per game. Jonathan Kuminga, 16 points per game. Jaylen Brown, field goal percentage, 46%. Kuminga, 52%. Three-point percentage, 34% to Kuminga, 32%. Rebounds for Jaylen Brown, 4.2%. Rebounds for Jonathan Kuminga, 4.8%. So at that point in their career, Kuminga's numbers seemingly are higher. And Brown made his leap next year, year four. Giant leap. His points skyrocketed to above 20 in that fourth leap. All right. So there's our three players. Maggette, Marion, Brown. Who do you think Kuminga will most resemble?
Is it my turn to go first or Maxime? You got it.
Well, I will say when you first, so each one of them, I got lost. It's like great storytelling, right? With each one, yeah. I was like, ooh, that could totally be it. Corey Maggette, at first I said, oh, that's the answer, right? I mean, not just in terms of position and, like you said, ability to get to the rim. He's also, Corey Maggette only played a couple seasons for us, right? With the sort of in the We Believe era. Mm-hmm. I think he was on the Clippers. So it's not fair to,
it's like Bobby Sura era. Like he was when we were just terrible. It was like him, Danny Fortson. It was not that good.
Okay. Yeah. So not a great time, but nonetheless, the point of comparison, Kuminga was drafted by the Warriors and continues to be on the Warriors. So, cause you know, my first thought was, okay, well, who's developing him? Right. And so I actually think Corey Maggette's career, it did not set him up. He was not necessarily surrounded by people that were going to give him the highest upside possible. So, you know, at the end of all of this, I'm swinging more Jaylen Brown. I really am. I believe in his upside potential. Like I said prior, I believe in the people around him to mold him into the type of player that he can be. I believe in a new era of the NBA that has access to more resources and can help somebody in his position achieve maximal success. And I mean, the dude is an unbelievable talent. So I'm feeling very hopeful, especially because I'm sure he can see the potential to be one of the star players on a team that actually has championship aspirations. And that's a very motivating factor.
Why don't you be our final answer, Kylan? I'll jump in here and say, I'd take out one of the options, Sean Marion. I don't think that's who Kuminga wants to be. You know, I think he's going to focus a lot on the offensive end. I think that's what he's trying to develop. And so I think it's going to end in one of those bookends. Corey Maggette, Jaylen Brown. You know, I think that's what he's aiming. I think he's aiming for Jaylen Brown. He might hit Corey Maggette, you know, for just rampant, unnecessary homerism and optimism. I'll say Jaylen Brown. The thing that we're going to need him to really lock in. We're going to need him to understand his role in Steph Curry's legacy for him to get towards Jaylen Brown. You know, for like, it's going to require everything of you. You're going to have to give more to the game than you have at any other point, you know, and really develop at a clip he has yet to develop. The reason I gave you those stats and the reason I'm going to be optimistic is that after 3 years, everyone in Boston was super pissy about Jaylen Brown and didn't think he had anything coming, and then made the leap, made that kind of commitment. So that's where I'm hoping. That's where I think it goes.
So the trajectory of Jaylen Brown's career is what gives me a little bit of hope, as you just pointed out, the big year four jump. It's also something when you look at Draymond Green, it's something that Steph Curry and Klay Thompson have all talked about, is that they felt like after 3 years in the league, that's where they really understood and knew what it takes to be a professional, play in the NBA, and then really be able to elevate their game and feel like they have the confidence to impact the game as a scorer, as a great defender, whatever, but they're able to bring their best selves out. So I think that's a big positive. And then you just pointed out, you look back at Jaylen Brown's career, he came into the NBA with that elite athleticism, good defender. I think they're right about the same size too, right around 6'7", 220. I think both Jaylen Brown and Jonathan Kuminga are. So there are some good comps, because I just read an article actually about this whole topic recently, comp size-wise. But it was some of the decision-making, some of the inconsistencies, very similar to a Jonathan Kuminga and what we've seen in his first 3 years. And Jaylen Brown was able to develop, and you point out, make that big jump. I am going to maybe also, this is too optimistic or you know, falling in the realm of homerism, but I'm going to say I think Jonathan Kuminga has that type of potential. He was a top draft pick for that reason. I feel like it's easy to forget how young he came into the league, did not play in college, played with a G League Ignite, which was very much an experimental, you know, thing of the NBA, where they were trying to give players an option to play 1 year there and prepare to go pro without going to college. I don't know if that benefited or hurt him at all in terms of readiness to come into the NBA. But either way, when you're coming in as a 19-year-old, that's a huge adjustment. Yep. And I'm hoping that in year four, he'll now have a good idea and perception of what you just pointed out, locking in, figuring out some of those mental parts of the game that have been lacking, and that can lead him to more consistent performances this season. I Is it going to happen this year? I guess like I see him having Jaylen Brown potential. Is it going to happen now in year four?
Right.
That I don't know, right. But I like the comp. I love the potential. I love the clips. You pointed out there've been some clips floating around on the internet of Jonathan Kuminga working out in the offseason. Love to see him shooting three ball. He looks dominant in what he's been doing and the work that he's been putting in, but can he lock in and bring that next level? And to me, a lot of it for him is going to be the mental focus and really being able to hone in on that side of the game. I also think it was very evident too early on that he was so focused on wanting to score and being an offensive right. impact player that he struggled defensively. But this past year we saw more of, hey, I'm going to play great defense and let the offense come to me.
Exactly
and
right.
he was so much better that way. So I do think it's also important for him that mindset has to come in. Like, I'm going to be a great defender and then whatever happens offensively, I'm not going to force it. You know what I mean? I think that we did see a leap in progress in Jonathan Kuminga that way this past season versus some of the major defensive lapses we saw in the first couple of years of his career.
Totally agree. And I think that Kerr was viewing him as Sean Marion. And here's what I mean by that. I think when Kerr watched Kuminga focus offensively as opposed to the other things, that's why he had such a quick hook. Early on in his career.
Short leash,
that,
yeah.
You know, that Kerr wanted him to be, no, focus on the intangibles. Get that rebound. Yeah. Play perimeter defense. Make the right switch. Stop going to the hole. You know, like, get into the intangible stuff here. I think he's beyond that with Kerr now. I think that he's going to have as long as a leash as Kerr can possibly give. And so we might be able to see that development, at least I hope so.
I hope so too. And I do think the minutes has been a big challenge too, because
yes,
you did have a short leash. You come in so young. You have to work through some of the struggles. I know a lot of fans, media members, whatever, have been frustrated by feeling like he didn't have a long enough leash to develop. Is he going to get the extended minutes to where he's able to work through some of those yep. issues? I think we saw more of it in year three, but I'd like to see even more in year four. Like, give him extended run. Give him extended run. At this point, what does it hurt? You know?
The stats. So I was shocked at, bore you with some behind the scenes stuff. I forgot what year Kuminga was in. So when I first started doing that Jaylen Brown Kuminga analysis, it was going to be Jaylen Brown's fourth season versus Kuminga's third. And he blew him out of the water. Like I said, they had made this giant jump. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, it's the third. And then I went back and all of these numbers surprised me. The one that surprised me the most, and it leads right into what you were saying, it's the minutes. Jaylen Brown, 25.9. Jonathan Kuminga, 26.4. Kuminga played more minutes during his third season than Jaylen Brown did. And I'm one of the people who said, why the fuck is Kerr not giving him more minutes? If at least as far as this development, that stat is a good thing. You know, it's a good thing. Kylan, I kept you longer than I thought. So long. I'm going to keep questions in pocket here. We'll keep them for the next time you come on.
Okay.
I really appreciated you coming on, but I know I'm not alone. People who need way more Kylan Mills in their life, where do they go?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. And the beautiful thing about my name is that I'm just at Kylan Mills on every social media outlet because there is no other Kylan Mills. So you can find me that way on Instagram, TikTok, whatever. Now Threads is the new thing, Twitter. So all of it, just at Kylan Mills, any social media platform. And you will find the latest also in the Locked On Podcast Network over on YouTube or wherever you get podcasts. We'll also be doing much more of this. And I'm looking forward, Bram. I'm going to have you on over there one of these days soon. And, you know, we'll continue yakking away about the Warriors.
Can't wait. I'll use this to be bitter as opposed to promote. I'm watching the Clipped series on FX, the thing where the dramatization of the Donald Sterling thing. And one of the characters I was introduced to. I just like drama. So I listened to the podcast. I like watching the drama play out. Let's see, in no particular order, the thing I don't like, and it leads to what you were just saying, they introduced a character in the third episode whose name was Bram. I didn't like that at all. I don't like that there's another Bram out there. Like, it hella bothered me. It's a very sidelight character. I don't like their casting. If they had casted this pen, it looked way more like the person they picked to play Blake Griffin or Steph Curry or Klay Thompson or any of the other people. The person they have for Blake Griffin is like 6'2", 150. It's like, has no one seen this dude? Like, why? Yeah. Why did they just focus only on the kind of red hair? But the drama stuff I really like. So, you know, thumbs up on that. And for point of reference, I learned, at least through that show, that Chris Paul and Blake Griffin hated each other through that run. Something I didn't know and wanted more
detail.
I didn't
know that, actually. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, something. There you go. Worth watching that. So I guess I was wrong. I was doing a little publicity, but it was for the television show Clipped. So yeah, there you go. You wanna watch Bram in a different setting? Clipped, apparently. But F that Bram, different guy. With that in mind, go Warriors. Hopefully, see you guys real soon.
Good.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.